I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
We are a bunch of sluts, aren't we? I love it. I love us sluts. The four of us sluts.
Hey, speaking of the start of the podcast.
Yeah, it is now. Speaking of feeling slutty and loving it, guys, look, check it out.
Hey. I was thinking that's a nice hoodie, and I didn't even realize it was Sick Boy merch when I was looking at it.
Don't make that facial expression ever.
That's a nice hoodie. I want one. I thought that was mine, Jer. I thought you ordered that for me. Stop dancing like that.
If you want to see how slutty I look, head over to YouTube, which you can now watch our Friday episodes on YouTube. We're having lots of fun with this. But also, I am showing off some new Sick Boy merch. Just came in hot off the press. Literally, I am sweating. This is so hot off the press. Scalded my skin. If you order your sweater and it burns you, we are not held liable. Fuck off.
No, but this is not McDonald's.
It is a very vibrant sweater. Bridie the other day made fun of me because it was so bright. But it's more bright. I think the camera makes it more bright.
It's definitely that bright.
It is definitely this bright.
Jer, I'm looking forward to when we were at the park the other day. I was probably going to say the exact same thing, Taylor, that you were just about to say.
Go ahead.
You were our beacon at the park when it was like, hey, so and so is going to join the park hang.
Yeah.
What should I look for? Because the Commons has been really busy lately because everyone just realized that there's a huge park in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
And it was like, Jer, just look for the pinkest sweater you could possibly think
look
of
for the
and
blinding
that's where
Jer is. Blinding yeah. sweater. So if you want to check out our new merch store, you can do that yourself. You can do that from our website, sickboypodcast.com, or you can go to shop.sickboypodcast.com and check out all the new sexy ass merch. If you want to feel slutty and represent your favorite podcast, you can do it. And just a heads up, we're going to be adding stuff to the store. Our patrons are going to be getting exclusive patron merch that will be available on the store.
Exclusive.
I was leaving the orthodontist today. And I called Taylor because I was so excited about a design idea that I had for some upcoming merch. So I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if you follow along, if you follow us on all of our social channels, then you'll be able to stay up to date and find out when we drop that latest merch.
And you know what, Bri? It wasn't one of those times where you call me and Jer, I know you'll totally understand what I mean by this. When Brian calls you with an idea and it's so underwhelming that
guys, I never call you guys with ideas
that you just kind of like, you kind of nod and then you feel bad because you feel the excitement. Like, you know that Bri is like on the limit and he's about to burst and you feel really bad because it's impossible to share that level of excitement with him because the idea is just so lackluster. Yeah, but this one,
it's the worst when
you and I are together, Tay, and I put him on speakerphone and he drops the idea and we look at each other like this, like, here we go again.
You know what, guys? I think I deserve the title ideas guy. I think I'm an ideas guy. And I think that, you know what? It's fine.
I agree.
I'm okay with 90% of my ideas sucking if like 1 in 10 times I have an idea that is just a fucking home run.
Yeah.
Are you guys 100%. Cool with that? Because
that's what ideas guys are for.
Even if even if it's like 95 times out of 100, yeah, there's shit ideas. I'm excited for those five.
Well, Warren Buffett says that
you should
invest in 20 companies, and only four of them will make you filthy rich.
Well, here's an idea.
Listen to the 1%.
Here's an idea. Let's move right along into this week's show. We got a lot of content to cover, and I'm fucking excited for it. And the first thing that I want to do, because I kind of like this, I like this habit we've been getting into in terms of starting the show with some content that actually leaves us feeling good. Feel Good Friday, true to the term, true to the name. I'm gonna prep this with letting you know that this was a tweet that I believe this young woman did not have any idea was going to blow up the way it did. And in terms of prep, there's been videos like released on the internet, especially on TikTok, that I really enjoy, where it's like young people getting their parents to read something, and typically it ends up being like really funny. So an example would be like, I recently saw one. I think I showed you guys. I showed it on one of our Patreon hangouts.
TikTok, Jer. Love that you're on TikTok.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
A young woman getting her dad to read a bunch of words in English, but he's from France and totally French, doesn't speak English at all, and it was like really funny. Right. This is kind of the same idea, but far more endearing and just like heartwarming. The tweet that goes along with this video, this young woman, Gurjiv is her handle. So I told my parents we were making a video for extra credit, but what they actually read was my first acceptance into optometry school. And here's that video right here.
I just got goosebumps.
You just have to read it. It's like tongue twister.
Me para pele.
No, don't know, para same time.
At the same time? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can open it.
Oh my god! This is incredible! Whoa!
Oh my god!
Where is this?
Wait, what is this school?
San Antonio already?
What? You just had your interview today. I know.
Oh my god!
I got an email like an hour later. You're kidding!
Oh my god! Congrats. DM, let me read this. Let me read this one. This is very important. Let me read it, okay? Dear Gurjeev, comma. Congratulations on your admission to the Rosenberg School of Optometry. I am pleased.
That is so fucking sweet.
Guys, I'm going to start reading punctuation out loud.
I know, it's so good.
from now comma? From now on.
Yeah. So big congrats to Gurjeev. That tweet blew the fuck up. There's 98,000 retweets. Her follow-up tweet was, I didn't expect
like
so many
10 million views on it.
I didn't expect so many people to see this, but so glad it brought y'all joy. Mm-hmm. And Gurjeev, I want to say congratulations, because if it wasn't for you and the work that you're going to do, then we wouldn't have people.
Yeah.
Getting people,
and you know what? I didn't even
eyeglasses.
Know that there was a whole other sub school of medicine for the study of nipples.
What?
Wait, what?
Dude, that one went way over my head.
Yeah, me too.
Optometry for nipples study. I thought that was the study of the nipples.
Well, the eyes are the nipples of the face.
Tay, you're gonna have to explain Thank that God. Joke because that was
joke
a
explained.
That was a womp womp. I think.
Welcome to Joke Explained. With Taylor McGill. Let's get into it.
It doesn't really. You've scratched as deep as you can go on that one, my friend.
Hey, but you know what? I'm really excited. This has inspired me to do a new thing. I think I'm gonna start watching a video every day of somebody getting good news, because that just like makes my heart feel like it's gonna explode.
That
like,
video,
I think that's my new favorite thing.
Yeah, that video made my day earlier. Lauren dropped it in Slack, and I watched it earlier, and I was just sitting on the couch, just like, you know that laugh where it's like, sometimes I laugh when I see puppies do something cute. It's like a It's a laughter of just like pure happiness. Like to see someone so happy is just, I fucking love that. So now that video leads me into this week's episode, this week's segment rather, of what the hell? All right, here we
go. That makes me happy every single time too.
So this is an article from MIT Technology Review by Antonio Regalado. The title of this article, this is really, really rad stuff. A blind man can perceive objects after a gene from algae was added to his eye. So a 58-year-old man who was completely blind, he was barely able to perceive whether it was day or night. After receiving gene therapy to add light-sensing molecules to one of his retinas, he could locate a notebook set on a table.
Whoa.
So we are on the, I mean, this is like, you're hearing this here on Sick Boy. And let's just say I'm alive for another 20 years. Not likely. But let's just say I am. And 20 years from now, you look back at this episode, we could be at a point where we have potentially cured blindness. Scientists in Europe and the US are reporting today that they describe as the first, what they describe as the first successful use of optogenetics to improve a person's vision. The feat involved introducing a gene from algae into the man's retina. Quote, I think that a new field is being born. Botan Roska, a professor at the University of Basel who led the research, said during a conference call with journalists. In Nature Medicine, the authors describe how their patient lost his vision after being diagnosed at 40 years old with retinitis pigmentosa, a degenerative disease that destroys the photoreceptors in the light sensing cells within the retina. So
just like our friend, the blind biohacker who had RP.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So this guy 18 years ago gets diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, loses his vision. And now, for the first time ever, is able to actually like use his eyes to some degree. Now, obviously it's not fully healed. However, pretty staggering stuff. The doctor.
Yeah, sometimes when I want to have my mind blown, I think about, like, I imagine a world probably like 1,000, 2,000 years ago when we as a species basically knew nothing. You know, like we were like
aliens were colonizing.
Yeah, when aliens were colonizing us. And I think back to, there's a scene, maybe it's in the movie Army of Darkness, when Ash goes back to like the medieval times and he has a lighter and he's like, and fire, and he turns on the lighter and everybody's like, whoa! And they're all like, their minds are blown. But I think back to then and I think of that time, and then I think of like a discovery like this where they're like, oh, we've managed to take a gene from algae and put it into somebody's eye. And now they can see when they couldn't. Like,
yeah,
obviously it's not that simple, but it just makes my mind like,
totally bonkers. I get that feeling every time Kyla is talking to her 96-year-old grandfather on the phone, I'm like, what does he think of this?
Of this, you mean like of this world that he is like,
yeah,
like
he was born in the, he was born in the 20s. The 1920s. Like imagine telling somebody then, like, yeah, you could pick, you know, you could have this thing, you can take photos, you can talk to anybody on the fucking planet, you can do your banking, you can, I'm not going to even go into detail of all the other things you feel.
You can start
your imagination run wild. You
can start an OnlyFans.
Yeah. Yeah. You could go on the dark web.
You can make people blind, not blind anymore.
I mean, it's interesting. Like when I read this article earlier, it made me think about a conversation I had recently with someone about, you know, one of the kind of sobering realities of doing this podcast. And I think it hit us pretty early on into the show was that, like, just by virtue of what we do, we are going to experience the loss of people that have become quite close to us. And that's like something, I mean, that's something that I think everybody will experience in their life, but like, especially with this show, it's like, we're bound to experience it a little bit more often than maybe, maybe not.
We're putting ourselves in the crosshairs of, of that possibility much more frequently than the average person.
But then the other thing that it made me think about was like how we're also going to be, and again, this is something that like, it's not like we're the only ones who fucking know this. Like this is something that anybody and everybody could find out if they just quickly Googled about this new field of study. There's this new field that's being born, like they said. But it also, we also are in the realm of like finding and hearing and reporting on these things that are the inverse of like losing people close to us, which is seeing diseases be fucking cured. Like,
yeah,
it's just, it's so fascinating to me.
And like Gurdjieff getting accepted to optometry school.
Yeah.
Like things as feel good as that.
Yeah, exactly.
And age, like being something that, I mean, well, we've always been battling against age for a long time, and like we've been by and large winning that battle. I mean, maybe that's not the right way to think of it, but you know, longevity has increased and sort of plateaued a little bit. Although even amidst the plateau of life expectancy, people are experiencing better quality of life later into life. And then when you hear people like, if anybody out there hasn't looked into or read or seen anything with David Sinclair, just go check out David Sinclair. Just search like David Sinclair longevity or something like that. And you know, this guy will blow your mind on what is being done in the field of trying to get people to live forever, basically, but not only just live forever, but like live high quality lives for as long as
possible. Dumbest idea ever heard in my life, but yes.
But the interesting thing about that, and like I don't totally agree with that in the sense that like high quality lives in terms of like physical health, but one of the things that I think is interesting about this time right now is that the way that like media shapes our expectations of what is happiness and what is success, like it feels like we're so driven to live these lives. I think we're going to talk about it later today, but like over being overworked and burnout and things like this.
Yeah.
But like, it's like constantly we have to work to try to achieve this higher level of success, whether it's financial, whether it's whatever, but it's interesting how we've become sort of like enslaved to this idea of like trying to be successful. So we live longer. So what? Like, we live longer so that we can put more money in our bank accounts, put more, you know,
capitalism, dude.
What?
Live longer for the man.
I disagree with that.
For the man.
You don't think that now is different than it was 100 years ago or 200 years ago in terms of the way that media has shaped our collective conscious to want to like desire riches and wealth and things like that? Look at it. Our lives are shaped by advertising.
I think that's true, but I think that has been a brewing stew for quite a long time. And although you could definitely make the argument that has like ramped up and is more of a part of our lives now, I think that has been a part of our lives for a very long time. And when we talk about longevity and living high quality lives for longer, nobody lives a high quality life without mental health. If it's not
physical, but
you can't live a long, healthy life without good mental health as well.
But I think that in terms of longevity, I think one of the things that's being overlooked is the mental health aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because we are focused more on like, hey, how do we live longer physically? Yeah. And then, you know, then we need to like prioritize our mental well-being after that. But
also,
I mean,
whose mental health is thriving after being on this fucking planet for 180 years? Like, come on. You know what I mean? They go on to say that the doctors employed this. This is like one of the wildest things. And I couldn't find how they go about this, like what the procedure looks like. But they employed gene therapy to add a light sensing molecule to one of the man's eyes. The gene they added, called, this is fucking badass, Crimson,
The gene they added called crimson comes from a single-celled algae species that is able to sense sunlight and move toward it. How fucking cool is that?
That's hot.
The idea of adding the gene, says Roska, is to engineer retina cells called ganglions, so they are able to respond to light, sending visual signals to the brain. The strategy requires patients to wear a set of electronic goggles that capture light contrasts in the environment and then project an image onto the retina at high intensity using the specific wavelength of yellow-orange light that triggers the crimson molecule. Here's a picture of the guy with the goggles on. So, I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but like, but I do. Like, he's looking.
It's kind of silly looking.
It's really. It's really intense.
Objectively silly looking.
So
it looks like he has a Nintendo, an SNES in front of him, and he's wearing a swim cap with like, different. Yeah. Connector nodes on it.
Yeah, and so for the people that
it's fashion.
That's right.
It's fashion.
Mm. It's fashion. By the way,
look it up.
Season 2 of Legendary. There's a song where that's the key. That's like the through line of the song. It's fashion. One of the best performances on Legendary I've ever seen. Yes. But for folks who can't see if you just don't know what YouTube is and you refuse to look it up. What we see is, yeah, Bri, you were right. The guy looks like he's wearing a swimming cap. He's got these like bananas goggles on. But in front of him, he's looking at a white table with a dark cup on the table. And so that swimming cap he's wearing actually isn't a part of what allows him to see. That's a machine, an EEG cap. The blind patient is treated with a novel form of gene therapy that employs a set of goggles to try to count objects placed in its field of view. So that's the cup. He's wearing an EEG cap so that researchers can measure his brain's response to light. With training, the man was able to perceive whether a notebook had been placed on a table in front of him. So just think about that for a second. You've been, let's say it took him 2 years to lose his sight, right? So 16 years, he hasn't seen a fucking thing. And now, with this algae rammed into his fucking retina and these crazy, like, Ready Player One goggles on, he now can see objects placed in front of him. He could also count dark-colored cups set before him, although not always accurately.
Do you think he could see your hoodie, Jared?
Could see that before the procedure.
He would look at this hoodie and then be reblinded. So we want to keep him far away from Sick Boy merch. And again, shop.sickboypodcast.com if you want to get a blinding sweater to ruin the eyesight of others. Efforts to adapt the technique as a blindness cure began in 2016. This is really interesting. When a Texas woman became the first person treated with optogenetics by a small company called RetroSense. The results of that study were never publicly reported because her head exploded.
What?
Are you serious? No, I added that. I'm just joking. No.
What? Although, and they continued?
I would say, with the company named like Opto...
18 heads exploded until they had a breakthrough.
It's RetroSense. Like it sounds like an evil company. Anyway,
RetroSense.
So
it does. Yeah, RetroSense. although officials later said that some patients claim to see light, that this is through that study in 2016, such as perceiving a bright window in a dark room. The level of vision restored to the patient remains extremely limited. So again, we're just scratching the surface here. But what he sees through the goggles is monochromatic, and the resolution is not high enough to read or even distinguish one object from another. The researchers said the goggles would likely be refined and that with more training, the man might be able to see more than he does now. They've been quoted saying, "The level of vision we are going to reach is impossible to predict." So kind of fucking interesting. And again, it's like one of those things that just that makes me excited to live longer.
It goes back
to CRISPR.
Which
I didn't always feel that way.
It goes back to CRISPR and makes you, and I mean, CRISPR has obviously like captured the minds the hearts and minds of like futurists and like sci-fi people all around the world. Yeah. Like it is the thing that I feel like everyone points to when they're like, think about any problem that we face as like physical humans right now, and CRISPR could have the answer to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In the not too distant future either.
Yeah. I think it's so cool that it's a solution that was found in the ocean. Cause the way that y'all are obsessed with outer space, ignore this fly in my apartment, but the way y'all are obsessed with, I'm trying
like
to
debate
successfully. I opened vinegar over there to try and lure it away anyway. So, but the way that y'all are obsessed with space, I'm really fascinated by the ocean, which is kind of like the space of Earth, because it's this very unexplored frontier relatively. So I wonder what other medical breakthroughs might come from space. Like, think about octopi. They're like, if octopi come on Earth, we're fucked. We're done. Humanity is done, and they're going to take over the Earth.
Yeah.
It is crazy how little we know about like the deep ocean and it is really interesting to think about. And it's crazy because like it is on this planet. Like we've gone to the fucking moon. Yeah, we haven't really explored the depths of the ocean.
It's far less explored,
I don't want to get into it, but there's a lot of speculation right now about these UAPs, formerly known as UFOs.
Whoa. What's the acronym change?
UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon.
WAP?
Why? Why did we need that?
I just want to say, President Obama came out this week and acknowledged that yes, UAPs, UFOs exist. There is stuff in our airspace. We do not know what it is. We cannot account for it. Whatever. That's for another day. But
I like that they call it unidentified aerial phenomena, though, because phenomena isn't necessarily an object. Object seems more like it could be alien life. Phenomena just seems like it's something strange that's happening that we just don't know.
Well, you've seen the John Travolta movie?
Look. We're not gonna fucking get into this. But the speculation is that these things, maybe these things that we're seeing flying around the air, because a lot of them are now interacting with the ocean and with no impediment whatsoever in ways that don't make any fucking sense physics wise. Guys, let me just say this, Brian, and shut the fuck up. Don't say anything back. Just let me say it. We'll get through it and then we'll go on to the next thing. Okay. There's speculation that perhaps these UAPs, UFOs actually haven't come from space. They've been here all along. And they're just coming from the ocean, and they're not manned. They're not being flown by little aliens, although they likely are, but they're not. Maybe not. Maybe they're just drones that are not being, drones like aerial drones that are being flown from another place, and they're just here to observe.
We're all with you on this.
Thank you.
Jerry, you're giving off strong anti-vax energy right now. No! I feel like that's the same type of people that you'd be hanging out with that would believe
because
that
those
shit.
Two things have to be married together, and there is no separation.
I hate
between
you,
Brian.
Correlation
I fucking
doesn't
hate
mean
you.
Causation, but I feel like there's a correlation.
All right,
there.
Smart guy. Yeah, let's see what happens when they fucking come down and want to take us all, and you get to stay here.
Wouldn't they be coming up?
Well, they could be. They could be. Or they come up to take us down. I don't. You know what? I'm fucking in regardless.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
So moving on then, last week, if you listened to our podcast last week, Bri, you brought up a good point. We were talking about like the things that we can do to get the things that we do right now in this hard time, which is for a lot of us lockdown, in order to like take care of our mental health and to take care of ourselves and, you know, what are the things that we're missing that we wish we had? And that led into this discussion about being overworked. And there's this really, you know, there's something interesting there to be said about with this. A couple of days ago, the three of us, we hosted an event for CBC, an internal event for CBC, which was all about accessibility. And one of the things that came out of that was like, you know, how with the pandemic, we've seen the world all of a sudden become far more accessible because the entire planet, the entire population needed it. And so the infrastructure existed to make work more accessible for people who need it. It's always been there, but it didn't really come to the forefront until we needed it because of the pandemic. That's a whole
like
other
working from home, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Like working from home. Something like working from home. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that in and of itself is a completely different discussion. But that's one of the positives that has come from this pandemic, one of the silver linings. But with that comes this this thought about how it also potentially leads to overworking ourselves. Right, that this inability to separate work from home because we are working from home, and so the discussion about like working, overworking ourselves, you know, over like can overworking kill you, sort of came up a bit. And Tay, you found this this really interesting study that came out of the
Who?
Yes, the wonderful band The Who did this study. And basically what it is, I'll go through the piece here that you left in Slack today, because I found it really interesting. In a study meant to scare you a little, the World Health Organization, oh, fuck, never mind. It wasn't the band The Who. It was actually the World Health Organization.
Shit. That makes more sense.
It makes much more sense. And an International Labor Organization found that working long hours can lead to startling health risks. And get this, this is fucking staggering. And caused over 745,000 deaths in 2016 alone. Now,
whoa. How did they track that?
It was a really big study. The NPR covered this study. And we can toss a link to the study in the show notes. Lauren, can you just take a note of that so I can remember to put that in the show notes?
Yes, Daddy.
Thank you. The wildest part of the study, the 2016 part, right? It doesn't account for the challenges posed by the global pandemic over the last year. Frontline workers are being exposed to the virus. Teleworking blurring work and life balance, which is what we were just discussing there a second ago. And employees picking up tasks from laid off or what the fuck is this word?
Furloughed?
Furloughed. What is that? Furloughed. What is that word?
Like put on hold, kind of.
Yeah,
it's a load
yep,
full
that's
of
fur. A good way to describe it.
Thank you. Coworkers who are full of loads.
That's the alternate way.
Yeah, it's funny because when they were furloughed, they actually released a load on another person working in the organization. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like what they're saying, right?
So,
they very much did.
While only 5%, according to the study, while only 5% of the U.S. population faces serious levels of overworking, a major portion of people affected by work-related illness are those living in the Western Pacific and Southeast Asia, Asian regions, according to the study. Some Chinese tech employees are still pushing back against the industry's 996 culture of working 9 to 9, 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week.
Whoa. That is.
Well, you see it like you see it in I've traveled a lot in Southeast Asia, and like the work culture there is, you know, is crazy. Like people like a lot of people who have like bedrooms and like little apartments adjacent to their businesses.
Yeah.
Because that is the, like, they are, I mean, which I mean, I'm kind of having this thought right now that, you know, I've traveled and seen a lot of that where it seems like the population is always working. Like every aspect of their lives revolves around, and a lot of times financially has to revolve around their work in order mm-hmm. to provide for mm. families that they have. But then now in the year of COVID, or the year plus of COVID now that we've been working from home, those lines are very much starting to blur on mm. in the Western Hemisphere as well, in a very different but similar way.
Yep.
That it is extremely hard to divide work from your home, and because your work is at your home, there is mm. whether it's, I think, largely unconscious, but it's like you're always available because mm. like that's your home. Like you're doing it from your computer, you're doing it from your phone. Yeah. So you should be always available to do this thing that I need you to do or that needs to get done, because you're always at your office. You're, yeah. 'Cause so your home is that.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge I find is like when I think about my other job, and I used to work 9 to 5 in an office, I would go to the office, and in the afternoon, if like my energy levels sort of dropped and I wasn't getting something done as quickly as I wanted to, and 5 o'clock came around, I would probably stay for like another 30 minutes mm. or an hour,
yeah.
and maybe sometimes longer to finish that task. But then I would go home and forget about it. Now, if my energy drops in the afternoon and I let something go for an hour, then I keep thinking, well, I got to get that done. Well, fuck, there's just this like one more thing I need to do. And I end up working later and later and later. But even when I stop actually working, I can't stop thinking about working. Like, I feel like it's so much harder to let go of it because it's like I'm always in the office.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's a feeling that we adopt where a feeling of guilt comes over us when we want to do something for ourselves. Ooh. because we are always in a position where we need to do something for somebody else, whether it's work related or not. You know, if it could be family related or friend related, like we center our lives around, or our lives become centered around doing things for others, whether it's, you know, something that we do out of love, that's something for a family member or a relationship or a friend or whatever, or it's something for work that we feel, you know, we need to because it's expected of us for our job, and we want to keep our job, or we want to get promoted, or whatever that is. And that feeling of guilt is really hard to escape. And like you said, Bri, it makes the time that you've set aside to rest and do good for you so that you can go back to work and go back to your family and go back to your friends, a better version of you. It ends up meaning that you at least mentally never get that time. And then, and then you go back into all these things that demand your attention and you can't get away from, because no one's ever getting away from work and family and friends, mm-hmm. but you end up going back into that yeah. environment more shitty because you'd never get the rest.
I think with that said, then this is my plea to you listening right now. So if you are listening to this at work, and if that means at home or an office or wherever you are, and you look outside your window right now while you're listening to this podcast, whether it be on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you look outside,
and you just finished buying a piece of merch,
and yeah,
at shop.sickboypodcast.com. Yeah, and so okay, keep going, Jer.
If you are working right now, and you take a look outside the window, and it's still sunny out, the sun's still out, and it's a nice day, close your laptop, go outside, and enjoy a little bit of that time, because according to this study from The Who, people who work 55 plus hours a week have a 35% higher risk of stroke and a 17% higher risk of dying from heart disease, according to the WHO. Brian has left to go outside.
See you later, Brian.
In the middle of the fucking recording. God damn it.
Yeah. No, Brian, we expect you to be here. when we need you to be here. Okay.
I wasn't talking to you, Brian. I was talking to the Brian who's working from home who needs to get outside now. Not you. You got to fucking stay inside now.
I can't tell you how close I was to really just leaving. It really went through my mind. I was like, fuck it, I'm going for a run.
I mean, how fucking crazy is that though? Like 55 plus hours a week, and I know there's a lot of people that work that much. 35% higher risk of stroke and 17% higher risk from dying from heart disease. It's staggering numbers.
Man, it's all habits. Like you gotta, it's like you said, Bri, it's that even when you stop work, it's the mentality. So when you do stop work, the first piece you have to work on is the mental part of it, to actually get away from it mentally. And then once you can get away from it mentally, then start to maybe chip away at some of those aspects. Like when it's, I mentioned this last week, but I have been for probably at least the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, super, like really, really, really put a ton of value on the weekend and a lot of value on like 7 p.m. onwards, basically, where it's like after that time, because I know I'm just like, because when you think about work too late into the night, even if it's something that you love to do, because I love what I do. I love everything that I do.
I think that's an important note, like to really touch on there about the, like, even if you enjoy it, because here's the thing is like, I enjoy my work. I think all of us enjoy our work. Lauren, I can't speak for you on your other job. I've heard you just shit talk the government so much, and God forbid they're listening right now because you'll probably get fired. But I love my work. But the thing is that work is work. Like work is
and
work.
When you go into the night and you work into the night, or you think about work into the night, that is going to have a major impact on your sleep.
Yeah.
And you know that because your work will influence your dreams. And when you have, like, you know, you can have crazy dreams, and I have like fairly vivid dreams on the regular, but I can have dreams that are vivid and crazy, but are like, they're happening in REM sleep and I'm getting a good sleep. And then there are dreams that wake me up, you know, 10 times a night. And I get thrown back into the same
wet dreams.
Same
I know dream what you're talking about. Wet dreams. You wake up, you're like, oh, my pants are. Oh,
it's
no,
so wet.
I made
and then it's always wet.
I mean, there's situations where it's easier to like say than do too. And so, I think
100%.
Like in my but other it's job all with habits. Mike, in my
once you make it a
Mike,
habit,
like Mike is the sole owner of this business. And you know, at the end of the day, I'm employed by him. And if I shut my computer at 5 o'clock and don't work, I mean, he's paying me to work those hours during the day.
And he knows where you live.
So that's fair. But, you know, for him, especially during a pandemic, thinking like, oh, fuck, like, is there going to be enough money this month to pay the employees? Like, is there going to be enough money to pay the rent? Like, can I afford to not work right now? And I know that the answer is like, rest is equally as important, because, you know, if you don't rest, then you're not going to be performing your best the next day.
Yeah.
But it's like also a lot easier to say that than actually put that into practice.
100%. And I mean, this has come up on the podcast in terms of like the discussion here in Canada, at least surrounding paid sick leave and, you know, people choosing not to fucking seek care when they need it at the hospital, going, no, you know what? I'm actually going to go home because I can't fucking afford to not work. But
I think the proof is that
home is privileged too. But.
Yeah, 100%. But still, yeah. I still stand by my point. Just close your laptop, go outside, enjoy the sun, because and God forbid, work isn't worth getting a fucking stroke. You know.
Also,
and honestly,
it's your
the
life.
The proof is in the the proof is in the pudding. Like when you do anything, like when people set goals, and this is a problem with goals is that every almost like I would probably say 99.8% of goals that are set are so outrageously lofty that they're just like you're just going, yo, I want to be. You're setting a goal to be sad, really. Like that's really the underlying nature of your goal when it's too lofty, because you're not going to hit it. So you set a goal, like, you know, with yoga practice. This is something that came up came up in a training that I was doing years ago where somebody said, what do I do when if I only have this much time to do yoga? And it was like, well, then if you've got 10 minutes, do 10 minutes. Once you see the benefit of what 10 minutes will give you, you'll be more incentivized to make it 15. And then because you've seen the result, you'll find that time, because we find time for the things that we know are beneficial for us. Mm-hmm. We find that time and we all have a pie, and it's taken up, you know, a bunch of things take it up, but you reorganize what takes up what chunk of that pie
and
all the time because of how you feel. So if you see the result in 10, you'll do 15. If you see the result in 15, you might make it 20. You'll carve out that time and find it, but you have to start small and see the result. Because like Bri, when you said that, like it is far easier said than done. But once you take that rest and you see the result of being recharged and then the result of how you can redirect that good energy back into your work and your relationships and your family, then that incentivizes you to like, oh, I want to prioritize that further because it's
so
helpful.
Start with 10 minutes on a Sunday, take 10 minutes off the rest of the week and you'll work. And then the next week and you'll see the benefit, then 15 and so on. You can improve.
Yeah.
From there.
Yeah. But, yeah. But yeah. Then 10 years from now, you'll get a full 2 days.
The other thing you have to think about though, too, is if the fear of not working on a weekend, if the fear of, going back to your normal life and like setting work down and going like spending time with family or friends or on your own in your apartment or house or wherever, if there's fear around the idea of that and work is actually a coping mechanism for you or a place where you go to get away, then you need to look at your life in general and say, what
get
are these things that I'm running away from and get
yeah,
your
you
life.
You need to get it. Get you life. Need to get it.
Yeah, get your life.
Yeah. So hopefully someone out there, and I know someone heard that. And this became an
inspirational podcast.
Yeah. How about that? Right? You want to know something
this
else?
Welcome to our TED talk.
You want to know something else that's inspirational and kind of hype, like a TED talk. So I like that we're going to touch on this right now because this episode there's been a big heavy theme around sort of the innovation that we're seeing in healthcare these days. You know what? Let me start this with a recent video about Neuralink that came out it was a couple weeks ago. Fucking crazy video. If you haven't seen it and you want to see it, check out the YouTube check out the podcast on YouTube right now, or you can Google it later. Their Neuralink is, bring up their website here. What do they say? Neuralink is a team of exceptionally talented people. We are creating the future of brain interfaces, building devices now that will help people with paralysis, and inventing new technologies that will expand our abilities, our community, and our world. So the idea behind Neuralink is basically like inserting a chip in the brain and a chip a little bit different from the chip that gets inserted into your arm when you get the vaccine. It's a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's not different. Bill. This is not a Bill Gates thing. This is
it's an Elon Musk thing. That's right. Yeah.
Different
yeah.
microchip.
Very different chip design.
Different billionaire evil man. So Neuralink basically, I think their idea is like, okay, how can we get to a point where someone with paralysis potentially might have the ability to move again or you know, use their bodies again in a way that they thought they could never do. They could never ever do. And so
I don't know, man, this seems like a good idea, but I'm just worried about my data. What are they going to do with that?
Yeah. So they've been making quite a
legit
bit of progress.
Concern.
And one of the bummer things about this is that the reality of it is that cause they need to, they're testing this stuff on animals. And so this is a video of an animal that has Neuralink installed in it. It is a monkey. The video is of a monkey using a computer interface to move an object on a screen simply by the use of the monkey's brain. Okay, so the video I'm showing you right now, you can see this monkey and see on the screen there, he's moving the little cursor, the white cursor, to the orange marks. Okay. Now you can see he's doing that.
It's monkey using a computer.
Yeah. Now he's doing that with his right hand. He's using a joystick to move the cursor. And the little thing that he has his mouth on is feeding him banana smoothie. So he's getting rewarded. He gets rewarded to use the joystick, right?
Should we have put a vegan trigger warning at the part of this top of this section? Or?
I think every episode we do needs some sort of trigger warning, but there's just too many warnings to say. So trigger
Sorry,
warning
vegans.
From here on out.
from here until we're dead.
Yeah. But again, I want you to take a look at this video again. So what you just saw was the monkey using the joystick, right? Mm-hmm. The first time they did it, the joystick is connected to the screen. So when he moves the joystick, he's actually moving the cursor. By doing that, Neuralink is reading basically his like eye movement, because his eyes are following the cursor, and he knows if I move the cursor this way and it hits the orange thing with the joystick, then I get banana smoothie. But here, take a look at the video again. The video I showed you was when they already recorded his eye movement and took the data with the joystick. In this video, they've disconnected the cord from the joystick. You can see that they're disconnected.
Oh my fuck.
So what you're seeing right now, what you're seeing is the monkey just moving that cursor with his eyes. That's all he's doing.
He gets is it his eyes or is it his mind?
His mind. Wow. Yeah, his mind. But I think it's linked to his eye movement, which is linked to his mind, right?
His brain is making his eyes move, and that's it. The chip is tracking what's happening in his brain.
And he gets a nice little reward. He gets a nice little smoothie every time he does it, right? Okay, so now they took that data from him moving the cursor with just his brain, and then they were like, well, let's get him to play Pong against the computer. And here's a video of a monkey playing Pong. I'm not, no hyperbole, probably better than I can play Pong with my fucking hand-eye coordination.
And your human brain.
The monkey is the paddle on the right. And he's using just his brain. He's not even using you can see he doesn't even have the joystick. He's just using his mind.
Whoa.
And then,
dude, it's going fast as fuck too.
They step it up. It gets faster. It gets more intense.
Dude, you can just look at him thinking.
and he's just like, yeah, banana smoothie.
Yeah.
Damn. More smoothie. I mean,
that's
really cute. Isn't that cute? And also, like, highly impressive. Also,
scary.
Lauren, the fact that you said
is
cute.
It scary?
This is cute. He's eating a banana now. They gave
that's
him a banana.
That's very cute. Yeah.
Wait, guys, is this scary?
Experiments on animals are super cute. Yeah. I don't know. I think it makes sense.
I think it makes sense, though, that he's
better than a human, though, because if it's just... Because it's like you said, hand-eye coordination. He just has to use eye coordination.
That's it.
Removing one type of coordination.
That's it.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
We're all...
So now...
So is it scary, guys? Like, is this a little bit nerve-wracking?
No, it's not scary yet.
It's not scary. No, look, it kind of like the AI thing, the deepfake conversation we had with our patrons, our sweet, sweet, sweet potato patrons, about deepfakes and the use of deepfakes for therapy. Deepfakes can be used in a really awful, evil way, right? Deepfakes can be used to hurt people. We've seen that already through the use of like porn and just like awful shit like that. But there's also a space for deepfakes to be used in a really healing, mind-blowing way. I think it's the same said for
this. Two things. Like, The question of like, is this scary was really a question for technology like 25 or 30 years ago or earlier than that, because this is really just an iteration of something that's been like building on itself for a very long time. So like we've been, you know, it's built into that already. Like the potential for Skynet has been there the whole time.
Yeah, right.
Like it's always been there,
monkeys,
and always will be there.
I've seen Planet of
the Apes. Yeah,
but
you could have said that about a thousand other things in technology's thing. But more importantly, because I don't want to get into that,
Eventually, because someday, dude, fucking, you're going
to... that's a rabbit hole.
If you're so naive that eventually, someday, you don't think that that's never going to happen, eventually, it's going to happen. Man, Jared,
this is, now, hold on. This is a problem.
Let me go back to my piece
UFO
here.
UFO friends, so I can hang out with them and validate my fucking concerns.
This is the fucking problem with Brian.
You can't talk about aliens.
You can't talk about aliens. You can't talk about fucking Neuralink. Brian's just going to freak out the whole fucking time.
So the thing that Brian is talking about is a very legit thing in the way that when you think about Neuralink, like 10 generations of Neuralink from now, like 10 iterations,
yeah, I've seen the documentary,
maybe even way more than that, where you know, Elon Musk talks about not having to speak to each other because you can speak to each other using the chips that are within you, and that your brain can convey your ideas and your thoughts way better than your words ever can. So that's a very, very science fiction fodder, scary part. But the first uses of Neuralink, Elon Musk has talked a lot about epilepsy being like a first treatment that, yeah, Neuralink would provide,
yeah,
where epilepsy is like an electrical thing, electrical signal that happens in the brain, and then that causes the seizure. And with Neuralink, at first, it will be to bring back to cure things like epilepsy, because it can fire an equal and opposite electrical signal at the exact same time. It can sense the electrical signal that's causing an epileptic seizure in real time and cancel it out with an equal and opposite, yeah, electrical signal. And it can do things like give people sensation back to their limbs if they have no feeling below the waist, because the nerves are
an electrical
system, and all these things, which is what it's all medical,
yeah,
oriented now.
Well, so here's
except the monkey playing Pong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I mean, so that monkey playing Pong leads us to something like this. Now, this isn't technically Neuralink. This is separate. But it's in the same line, in the same sort of path as what we're seeing with Neuralink. This is an article that comes from NPR and from a conversation that was heard on All Things Considered. Man who is paralyzed communicates by imagining handwriting. This is so fucking cool. An experimental device that turns thoughts into text has allowed a man who was left paralyzed by an accident to construct sentences swiftly on a computer screen. The man was able to type with 95% accuracy just by imagining he was handwriting letters on a sheet of paper. This is according to the Journal of Nature. Quote, what we found surprisingly is that he can type about 90 characters per minute, says Krishna Shinoy of Stanford University and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. Now, just for context, I looked this up. So she was saying 90... characters per minute. So I did a little test, a typing test, to see how many words per minute I could type. The average person types between 30 and 40 words per minute. That translates to about 190 to 200 characters per minute. Now, that the average person, 40 words per minute. My words per minute, typing wise, 54. Okay, so this guy is doing 90 characters per minute. The average person types about 190 per minute. So he's not.
I wonder how fast do you know the comparison and how quickly you can type in words per minute on a keyboard compared to texting? Do you guys think you text faster than you type, or do you type faster than you text?
Type faster.
Yeah, probably type faster. Yeah, I don't. I actually don't know.
I wonder if there's a big difference between like a 15-year-old now. Mm. And like us with phones versus like a keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, definitely.
I told you about this the other day. You made a joke about how this guy is typing 90 characters per minute. He's typing at about the same rate as your father, who types with two index fingers looking at a keyboard with glasses, which made me laugh. The device would be most useful to someone who could neither move nor speak, says Jamie Henderson, a neurosurgeon at Stanford and co-director with Shinoy of the Stanford Neuroprosthetics Translational Laboratory. That's a lot. Quote, we can also envision it being used by someone who might have had a spinal cord injury who wants to use email or say a computer programmer who wants to go back to work. The idea of decoding the brain activity involved in handwriting is just brilliant, says John Guy, who directs the National Institutes of Health's Brain Initiative, which helped fund the research. Quote, but it was only one subject in a laboratory setting, Nye says. At the moment, it's a great demonstration of proof of principle. The man who agreed to test the device is unable to move his arms and legs as the result of a freak accident. This is so fucking sad. He was taking out the garbage, slipped, and fell and became a quadriplegic. That's how he ended up in that state.
It's always tragic, but that's even worse.
Do you think they said it was in a controlled testing environment in a lab, and he was the first one to do this? Do you think they gave him the technology to use after, or were they just like, hey, here you go, let's test this out and see if it works? Hey, it works pretty well. Okay, thanks a lot. See you later.
Probably not, but I mean, kind of a bummer that they wouldn't have.
It would be a bummer. Yeah, fuck, it would be a huge bummer.
It also depends on whether it was like whether it's only... You can't only use it in a lab setting, you know what? Because it's chunky or something.
Reading the article here, maybe he does keep it because the system relies on electrodes surgically implanted near the part of the brain that controls movement. In previous studies, participants had learned to control a computer cursor or robotic arm by imagining they were moving their hands. This time, Henderson, Shinoy, and a team of scientists had the man imagine he was writing individual letters. So he's imagining that he's handwriting while a computer monitored the electrical activity in his brain. Eventually, the computer learned to decode the distinct patterns of activity associated with every letter in the alphabet, as well as several symbols. Once that process was complete, quote, we can determine if the letter you wrote is an A or a B or a C, and then plop that onto the screen, and you're able to spell out words and sentences and so forth, one letter at a time. In previous experiments, participants have been able to use their thoughts to point and click at letters on a screen, but that approach is much slower than just simply imagining handwriting. Also, because the new system relies on familiar thoughts, the participant was able to use it almost immediately. So it took no time at all. He just like thinks, all right, I'm writing a J. I'm writing an E-R-E-M-I-E-I-S-T-H-E-B-E-S-T. Which spells out Jeremy is the best.
You know what would be interesting though?
Jeremy is the best. That's all he wrote. Jeremy is the best.
How do they distinguish between an uppercase A and a lowercase A? Or like an uppercase O and a lowercase O? Like they're
Does it matter at this point? I mean, fuck.
Yeah,
you know what? As soon as you can produce more characters thinking than you can typing, that will be a mass-produced product and it will be available to everybody. Why would you ever continue to use your fingers when you could use your mind?
Well, again, at a faster rate? Again, it goes to that point of like the when we see things introduced into the world that are for accessibility reasons, for accessibility period, for people who need it because they can't otherwise communicate or move or get around the world or whatever the fuck it is, it's just better for everyone. Like in that discussion we had the other day with the CBC, one of the examples that came up was like texting. Texting was introduced as a form of accessibility. Who the fuck doesn't text now? I mean, who chooses to call over text? No one. Like we just Nobody. Text. Brian, put your hand down.
Yeah, Stop calling.
You message me 90% more than you call me.
But I message you if I need you to do a task. I call you if I want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Oh, just wait till Brian can just send you his great ideas with his mind.
We've gone full circle, guys. We've made it full circle here.
I mean, I'm glad we touched on that on that because it is just like we are living in really exciting times, and there's only more exciting times around the corner. And again, in the
in the ethos of Feel Good Friday, this is the shit that makes me feel good. This is the shit that gets me excited to live, to see the future, excited to live, to see a time where Brian can just telepathically send me his fucking thoughts, or see a time where we, you know, where we see monkeys playing, winning Pong tournaments, or see a time where we finally have the answers to what these UAPs are up in the sky, you know? So
in that time we'll be pimp chimping, guys.
Also, I gotta say, the UFO, the UFO here on the screen, right up by Tay there, that is, that has nothing to do with the podcast other than the fact that I'll suck an alien's dick. I will suck. I would be the first in line to suck alien dick.
Do you think like alien phallus is similar to like Earth? I mean, there's because there's so many different dicks on Earth. Like there's so many creatures and there's so many dick variations.
I don't think they do. I actually don't think they do. And if they did, they're probably really small and cute.
Wait, so do you think that they're above biology?
If they're so technologically advanced, maybe they're at the point where they've evolved to have these microchips built into their brain. And not only can they just think their thoughts at one another, they can also inseminate one another via thoughts.
With ideas. So I feel like I am always trying to inseminate people with ideas. I feel like that's the only thing I do.
And
don't ask me for consent enough.
Well,
with
I was going to say it's insemination. No, he always does it with consent. There's always consent.
I'm putting on my idea condom.
Oh, fuck. Folks, we love sitting down and shooting the shit with you every single Friday. And that's what Feel Good Fridays are all about. Again, I've said it 1,000 times before, but you can check out the podcast Friday episodes now on YouTube. Head over there. Subscribe and click the bell icon so you know when the episodes are coming up. And and let us know what gets you excited about the future. Tell us in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. And hey, you don't have to watch it. If you're one of those people, you can also just simply listen. Also just as easily at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or over at the CBC Listen app.
And if you have something fun that you want to send us an idea, if you want to inseminate us with an idea, we've gotten some pretty interesting ideas.
You have all of our consent.
Recently.
You have all of our consent.
Recently, we got some really, really interesting ideological ideas. Keep them coming. letters at sickboypodcast.com. Love to hear from you.
The crazier the
and
better.
We might read them. We might read them on the show. Yeah, just like
we might
ramp.
We
it
might
up.
Or
ramp it up
or
ramp
some,
it up.
If, or sometimes those ideas are not okay to read on the podcast. And
if
so
there
we
are
keep
legal
those
ramifications, we might not read them. But if there are not legal repercussions or potential repercussions, we consult with our lawyers. Obviously,
if
we might
you
read
refer
it on the show.
Your letter as a manifesto, then we might not read it.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah. This actually manifestos are.
I gotta say this. I have to say this because we talked about this one email.
Twice
that we talked about this one letter that came in, a listener letter that was just a little bit off the wall. And if you want to know what that letter was, go to patreon.com/sickboy. And on our next,
we're only going to tell you
on our next hangout, on our next host hangout, which the four of us sit down and chill and hang out with our lovely sweet potato patrons for an hour, hour and a half, play games, shoot the shit. Join us on Patreon, $5 tier or more, and we will read to you the letter that can never be read on the show.
And we can have a discussion about the points that have been brought up in
yeah, 100%. 100%. So that is letters at sickboypodcast.com. If you want to be a guest on the show, you can do that by going to sickboypodcast.com/contact. And we had somebody that went a little bit outside the box, didn't send it to letters at sickboypodcast.com like we asked you to. Send it to the DMs, which is okay. Which is okay. Lo, what was the this little DM that we got?
This happy little DM says, Since the start of the pandemic, I have been doing pizza delivery and landscaping. I do my jobs, a set of goggles that hold my headphones and mask. Sick boy, of course, is a very important ingredient to this attire. Thank you for such a great podcast. You've given me the words to explain to others the frustrations of our medical system, the experiences of your guests, and the different perspectives we have as Canadians toward health. I love your voices. Meow. Till next episode. Monkey hiding eyes emoji. Mm.
Oh, that's a great emoji. I mean, not I as quite as manifesto-esque as I would have liked it to be, but, you know.
It's well, pretty good.
You know what? When I read it, I didn't immediately send you guys a message going, holy shit, I just read the most fucked up email.
Oh my God, guys, we got to stop talking about it.
Guys, monkey covering eyes. Monkey covering eyes.
Monkeys covering ears.
Guys, let's wrap this up. Thank you so much to everybody who makes this show happen. Sick Boy Podcast is produced by Jeremy Saunders, Taylor McGilvery, Lauren Sankey, and myself. Our manager is Jeff Lonis. Donovan the Meerkat Morgan does the sound design, and our theme music is done by Rich O'Coin, Take Part, and occasionally some special guests. We love all of them. And we love you, listeners. Thank you.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.